This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting Houston Public Media. We are just a three-hour drive from Sutherland Springs, Texas, where a mass shooting took at least 26 lives yesterday. Investigators are still trying to figure out the shooter's exact motive. We're keeping an eye on it. We're expecting a law enforcement update any moment. If anything major develops from that in this hour, we'll bring it to you right away. But regardless, you'll always get the latest from your NPR member station and online at npr.org. This hour, we are also focused on money, how the super rich protect theirs, and how we all could take better care of ours. We begin with a new investigation that reveals how cleverly the wealthy place their money around the world. The Paradise Papers is a global report by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. It reveals the offshore activities of some of the world's most powerful people, including the wealthiest member of Donald Trump's cabinet, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. Hundreds of reporters have been working on this story. One of them is Michael Montgomery with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, and he joins us from the studios of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Michael, welcome to 1A.
Hi, Joshua. Nice to be with you.
Joining us from our home base in Washington, Marina Walker Guevara is the deputy director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Marina, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I should note we're just going to be discussing the Paradise Papers for this first segment of the program before we move on. So if you have questions or thoughts, particularly if you've read some of the report and want to discuss it with some of these journalists, now's the time to send your questions in. Email us 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Michael Montgomery, let me start with you. I understand your reporting for this took you to the harsh climate of Bermuda to learn a little bit more about how the wealthy deal with their money. I think we've heard a lot about offshore accounts and tax havens and so on, but what was the big takeaway you got from being in Bermuda on the ground?
Other than it's a very nice place to vacation, I think my impression was that, you know, you arrive in Bermuda, you see, you know, beautiful beaches, tourists, all sorts of things that hosted the America's Cup. But what's really happening there is what you don't see. And it is these companies that hire or set up offshore companies there to manage, you know, billions and billions of dollars in profits and in money that they keep parked overseas. And the interesting thing about Bermuda is when it comes to offshore islands or countries, it's sort of at the top of the heap. So it caters to the wealthiest. We're not talking about the 1%. We're talking about the 0.01%, as well as huge companies that show up in these documents, Apple, Facebook, Nike, and very wealthy individuals or business operators like Wilbur Ross.
I recall from the predecessor report to the Paradise Papers, the Panama Papers, that a lot of these companies are basically just kind of a mailbox and an address at a registration with the Bermudan government. But Michael, put this into some perspective for us. This is a lot of business in Bermuda, but how much of Bermuda's economy is this? I mean, if you pull these offshore tax havens away, would the economy basically just fall apart?
Well, Bermuda has a more sophisticated economy. It's developed it's been a pioneer in the reinsurance industry, which is something that's very different from what we're talking about. These are companies that insure insurance companies. Sorry. So, like for example, after 9/11, Bermudian reinsurance companies were involved in some of the first payouts. So there's things that Bermuda does that most Bermudians are very proud of. The offshore, setting up these sort of offshore companies, shell companies, what we found is the company that's at the center of this leak, this law firm Appleby, it was founded in Bermuda, but it operates in all these other island entities. So one of the places it relies on a lot is the Cayman Islands, because the Cayman Islands has a little bit of a different regulatory structure. It's more secretive. So you might have firms operating in Bermuda that have global, you know, a network of global offshore entities, and they'll use one or the other. It's sort of a menu depending on what these places offer in terms of secrecy or tax savings.
Marina Walker Guevara, it's interesting. I've never, that I can recall, read an article on a website, as particularly an investigative report, that had one of those click-through windows, like a terms of service window. But when I read the report on your website, it had this window that basically said that you're acknowledging that the report is not alleging any criminality. You're making it clear that the report is not accusing people of breaking the laws. And once you click that window, then you can read the report, which was kind of startling to me. But it's also, I think, kind of the point of the report, that as galling as this may be, it's legal.
That is the entry to our offshore leaks database that details the offshore holdings of thousands of people around the world. To the main website, you can enter without clicking anything. But this is a really good point that you make. And it's because so much of what's going on in the offshore world, we have decided as a society that it should be quote unquote legal. And when you start looking at it, you find so much immorality, so much really outrageous behavior by a very elite group of people who are allowed to operate out of sight, out of mind, skirting taxation, regulation, and oversight. And so that makes you wonder, all the things that are legal, should they really be legal?
Talk about how the Panama Papers flowed into the Paradise Papers. We spoke on this program a few months ago when the Panama Papers came out, this huge investigative collaboration between ICIJ, the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, and a number of other news organizations. How did this come about? Was it just another series of leaks in the same leak that produced the Panama Papers, or was it something else?
This is completely different. We thought we had seen everything there was to see in the offshore world, believe me, after Panama Papers. And then one day we got a call from our German partners at Süddeutsche Zeitung, and it turned out that there was something else, and it was bigger. It was more documents, and it was super substantial, with public figures from around the world, and also like a higher end level of client. We are talking now about some of the most iconic brands in the corporate world. We're talking about 13 members, donors, cabinet members, and advisors of the Trump administration. We're talking about the Queen of England also doing business offshore. So this was a complete different level, more sophistication, more complexity, and more money that was escaping national treasuries and affecting middle class and poor people.
We're speaking to Marina Walker-Guevara, the deputy director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, Michael Montgomery, an investigative reporter with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, and with you. We welcome your questions and thoughts about the Paradise Papers. Email us 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Michael, could we clarify a little bit? We've heard a lot lately about Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and how he factors into all of this. To be clear, no one is suggesting that he did anything illegal or that he's guilty of or culpable of tax evasion, including not this report, but the connection to some Kremlin money has gotten him under some new scrutiny. Can you sum that up for us?
That's right. I mean, what we see is these offshore havens or these offshore entities become kind of melting pots because these companies, the ownership, you don't necessarily know who owns these companies, and you have layers of companies. It's hard to follow the money, if you will. And so in the case of Ross, some years ago, he became a stakeholder, shareholder in a shipping company called Navigator Holdings. Navigator Holdings ended up doing a lot of business with a big Russian energy giant called Seabor. Well, Seabor, two of its major investors, one turns out is the son-in-law of Donald Trump, and the other is a guy named Gennady Chimchenko, who is a friend of Trump's. Actually, they play hockey together, and he is under U.S. sanctions. Now, was Seabor under sanctions? No, but they had a very close relationship with Navigator at a time when Secretary Ross had big shares in the company. The big thing is when he became Commerce Secretary, he held on to those shares. Not quite sure why. I mean, he's a very wealthy man. Why did he maintain an interest in those companies? But it's correct that he was not doing direct business with the company under sanctions. I think the question we're seeing playing out today and probably this week is, to what degree did he fully disclose these connections in his ethics filings. He said he did. Some Democratic senators are saying he didn't, and there's going to be calls for an investigation.
Michael,
discuss with this. Go ahead, Marina.
I was going to say that we should clarify very quickly that it's the son-in-law of President Vladimir Putin, who is a co-owner of Sibor, the Russian energy company. I think we said you said accidentally son-in-law of Donald Trump.
We should note before we're out of time on this that the Commerce Secretary gave an interview to CNBC today where he basically pushed back against the report and called the media's reporting of these ties, quote, just an example of the press trying to find anything they can, however remote or silly, to attack the president and somehow link him to Russia, unquote. He also said that these links were disclosed on a Form 278, which is a financial disclosure form, in his case, three times, that from the Commerce Secretary. Briefly, Marina, we're low on time, but where would you like to see this report go from here?
I think reporters have done what we can do. We have exposed the secrets. We have exposed these structures that are kept from oversight and from the public view. And now it's up to citizens to decide how they're going to hold their governments accountable, how they are going to hold accountable the businessmen in their societies, and especially the elected officials. Is it okay for them to hide their money away in offshore tax havens where everybody else is paying taxes?
Marina Walker-Guevara, the Deputy Director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Marina, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
And investigative reporter Michael Montgomery with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Michael, thanks very much.
Nice being with you.
All right, we'll zoom out from the super rich down to, well, you and me, and how we deal with our money in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you from Houston. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.